Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Many in baseball have long believed that no amount of coaching can make an average player exceptional. But according to our guests, that is changing, and teams are now looking for untapped potential for their players. On the phone with us are the authors of a new book on the subject of using data to improve players. They're Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk. Ben is a staff writer for The Ringer. He also hosts the Effectively Wild podcast for FanGraphs and regularly appears on the MLB Network. Former staff writer for 538 and Grantland, a former editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Ben Lindbergh, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Good talking to you, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Travis Sawchuk is a staff writer for 538 and regularly contributes to The Athletic Cleveland, previously covered the Pirates for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Travis, thank you so much for joining us, too.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. I think Ben has the more impressive resume, but I'm glad you brought me on too.
Well, your new book is impressive. It's called MVP Machine, How Baseball's New Nonconformists Are Using Data to Build Better Players. And as you listen to these guys talk, I think you're going to learn a lot. I learned an awful lot about baseball. I knew a lot, but I've learned that I don't know very much at all, to be perfectly honest. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Does player development make sense to you? What questions do you have about the use of data to find hidden talent? And these guys have written a book that goes into some of the really interesting players and interesting people who have changed how teams look at player development, for sure. So join in again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I was fascinated by guys like Kyle Bodie and Brian Bannister and Doug Lotta, the people that you write about that are really making a lot of changes in baseball. And we'll talk about those people. But when you think about using data in baseball, I think the book Moneyball probably and the movie Moneyball comes to mind for a lot of people. What was the, and you write about it in your book, what was the concept behind Moneyball, and then we'll talk about how that's changed.
Well, I guess I'll start. And, you know, I think for the past 15, 20 years, Moneyball came out in 2003, so it's been a while now. The prevailing way to win, to get a competitive advantage in baseball, is to find undervalued players who are already good, but for whatever reason are undervalued by the market. So in Moneyball, which talked about the 2002 A's, it was about walks and on base percentage and how the value of that wasn't recognized. So you could go get guys who did that and were valuable, but didn't cost that much. And in the years since, other teams have all gotten on board that revolution. And so every team is looking at stats. Every team is appraising past performance very accurately. Every team has quantitative analysts in its front office. So it's very difficult to separate yourself from the pack in that way anymore. So now the new area of innovation in baseball is player development, is not finding undervalued players who are already good, but finding ways to enhance or create talent. Getting guys who haven't shown that type of performance in the past, but using some new tools and technology and coaching techniques, you can change their swing. You can teach them a new pitch. You can refine the pitches they already throw or have them throw a good pitch even more than they already had. And suddenly they're new guys with new stats, and you can pick them up and make those conversions yourself. And that's the way that a lot of teams are winning these days, and that's the way that a lot of players are transforming their careers.
It was really, really interesting to me, but there was a lot of resistance. I mean, if you look at the history, as you talk about, you guys write about in your book, there was kind of a big resistance to change and player development. I don't know if it wasn't on their minds or what was going on there, but they didn't really take to some of these new ideas that guys like Kyle Bodhi were pushing.
Yeah, I think a big part of that reason why it was so slow to change is there wasn't the technology available to measure biomechanical properties in the pitching motion or the launch angle that's produced by a swing or the spin rate of a curveball. So in just recent years, some new technology advances have allowed for more data to enter the game, much more data than was available in the Moneyball for the Moneyball A's back in 2003. High-speed cameras have come around, become more affordable, so pitchers can see exactly how their hand and wrist impart spin on a ball. A batter can better see how his swing works. So a lot of these advances have just given players more data or more photographic information off which to make and guide improvement. And, you know, we have a historical chapter that Ben took the lead in writing on the book. And, you know, some ideas that are being employed today are not new, whether it's, you know, Ted Williams was talking about swinging up on the ball when he wrote his book in 1970, I think it was. Brand Tricky had a lot of innovative ideas. The Royals had a prospect academy they tried to get online. But part of the reason that none of these things really took root is there's just no hard data to back these ideas. So they were kind of lost in the baseball wilderness. But, you know, the technology started to advance and people like Kyle Bodhi started to come around and apply that technology. And Bodie's a fascinating guy who is a true baseball outsider. He's a college dropout at Baldwin Wallace in Cleveland. He was a Parma, Ohio native. He worked at the Olive Garden after he dropped out of school, and he decided to move out to Seattle where he met his girlfriend, And it was in Seattle when he started coaching Little League and freshman high school baseball where he really started to question some of the practices of the coaches he was working for and around. And, you know, they had no good reason for why they did it. They had no information, no data to back it. And, you know, he said they didn't even seem to grasp Moneyball principles. You know, the book had been out for a few years at that time, and he was kind of baffled. Why do these coaches seemingly know so little about baseball? Why can they not back up any of their ideas? And that really sparked in his mind, you know, here's an opportunity to go actually learn about, back then, especially the pitching motion. How does the pitching motion work? Why does it work? What tools, training tools are effective? Is weightlifting good? Are weighted balls good? He built a biomechanics lab out of a few thousand dollars and constructed this kind of three-dimensional object he needed out of PVC pipe in a Home Depot aisle. And just did all these kind of homebrew things to try to actually get some feedback, some data to which inform how to develop players. And, you know, it was kind of that personality and that pioneering spirit along with the technology, whether it's a Kyle Bodhi, Brian Bannister in baseball, Trevor Bauer as a pitcher, you know, looking for every piece of information and training tools that might help him. It took technology, but it also took some pioneers in the field to advance this and not care what people really think about it or say about it and not just trust conventional wisdom that's been handed down generation after generation.
Yeah, I guess really a fascinating story. I mean, the guy had to relearn and study. He read books on physics and really was single-minded in his efforts there. And I want to talk some more about him perhaps. But our two guests today, Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk, have written a fascinating book. It's called The MVP Machine, How Baseball's New Nonconformists Are Using Data to Build Better Players. We're going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back with them. Questions for them, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
And there's a fly ball.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Should baseball teams trade players who aren't performing well, or should they work with them to develop their talents? We just heard Jesus Aguilar's home run. That was from last year. He's having more problems this year at the plate, and the Brewers haven't they're hanging on to him for now, and maybe their idea is to see about developing his talent a little bit more. I don't know. We're talking with Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk right now on the show. Ben, staff writer for the Ringer. Travis, a staff writer for 538, regularly contributes to The Athletic Cleveland. Their new book is called MVP Machine, How Baseball's New Nonconformists Are Using Data to Build Better Players. And maybe they'll do it for Jesus Aguilar, and maybe they won't. We'll find out, I guess, as time goes on. Questions do you have for our guest today about baseball? Does player development make sense to you? What questions do you have about the use of data to find hidden talent? What do you think about the number of strikeouts that we've got in Major League Baseball today, or the efforts by a lot of players to hit home runs, and the work going on by pitchers to kind of prevent them from doing that? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You guys did have Christian Yelich, and your book is right up to date, by the way. You talk about Yelich and winning the MVP last year. Is he someone you think that uses these data? Travis, maybe go to you.
Yeah, I've talked to Christian about his swing and about his production really in the beginning, when he's beginning to hit some of these home runs in bunches. And he was sort of resistant to the idea that he needed to change anything, or that it was a good idea to teach everyone to adopt that Ted Williams light uppercut and get the ball into the air. But, you know, I do think he, and we cite him as a book, as someone who has changed his batted ball profile, who has lifted more balls in the air, maybe attacked pitches different, been a little more aggressive, I think, early in counts. And, who, you know, the Brewers are a very data-savvy organization, and I'm sure they're giving him a lot of good data-based insights. So even if he's not a J.D. Martinez leader of, you know, the so-called fly-ball revolution and getting the ball in the air, he's one of these guys who's really benefited from it. And when you think about him as a Marlins player, he, you know, I think for every fly ball in the air, he was hitting close to 3 ground balls, and you know, he was still a productive player. But he was a guy who, if he could just, you know, hit a few more line drives, get a few more balls in the air, with his ability to contact and do damage, there was untapped potential there. And switching ballparks doesn't hurt either, as Miller Park is much more friendly for hitters, of course. But yeah, he's a great example of, say you're looking to acquire a player, you know, you shouldn't think that their skills are fixed anymore. You should look at areas where they can grow. And if the Brewers are thinking, hey, you know, what happens if Yelich gets a little more, hits a few more balls in the air, you know, he could develop a lot more power. And I think some people were seeing that and thought that was either going to be a natural evolution or something to his team to accelerate. So, yeah, he's a great example of improving skill. He's a dramatic example of this, too, of taking a guy where you see some untapped potential and really increasing it. The Astros have done a lot of that with pitchers they've acquired, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Ryan Presley. So, yeah, if you're a smart organization today, we argue that, you know, you should be looking for skills that you can enhance, areas to grow, and not assuming players are fixed in their talent by any means.
Yeah, and Yelich finally, quote-unquote, finally got his 30th home run last night. He said there was a little bit. I mean, that's the first. He's the first Brewer to do that before the All-Star break, to hit 30 home runs, if I'm not mistaken. I think there was a little mental aspect to that as well, because he'd gone quite a few at bats without a home run. I mean, quite a few for him, anyway. Cooper on the line with a question from Clover. Cooper, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm just wondering how this whole like process even happens. Like, how do they actually use data to like find hidden skills? Like, how does it even happen?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for that call. So how do they use the data to find those hidden skills?
Well, I think it can happen in a number of ways. In some cases, we've seen veteran players who seemingly had already demonstrated what their talent level was, what their performance was, who have dramatically changed their career by changing something, some aspect of their performance. And the details are different in every case. But for instance, Rich Hill, who is one of the foremost figures in this movement, he's someone who didn't break out until he was 35 years old, and he'd been bouncing around the majors and the minors and independent ball. And then suddenly Brian Bannister, who was working for the Red Sox at the time, looked into his data, which had just become available, data that showed the spin rate of his pitches, for instance, and he realized that Rich Hill's curveball was this hidden weapon, that it could potentially be one of the best pitches in baseball. But Hill hadn't been using it that much just because he had always been told, establish your fastball, throw your fastball first, everything works off the fastball. Bannister came in and said, no, just get out, throw your best pitch if that's what's working for you. And Hill immediately transformed himself, became one of the best pitchers in baseball, made much more money than he ever had in his entire career up to that point. So that's one story. You know, there are a lot of stories of guys like JD Martinez and Justin Turner who realized that they needed to make a change. And so, you know, they were bouncing around from team to team. They weren't solid in their roster spots, and they figured, I can do better than this. You know, in some cases they saw other players who had made a change, and they went to the same coaches and they said, you know, fix me. I'm putty in your hands. I want to hit fly balls and hit for power instead of hitting singles all the time. And those guys rebuilt their swings and became two of the best hitters in baseball. So that's how it started, I think, with these initial trailblazers just looking to do something different and taking advantage of data and technology that had just become available, often by seeking outside sources, you know, people who are running their own facilities, who are thinking in an unorthodox way. Nowadays, though, a lot of those ideas are adopted by the teams, so that as soon as you get into a minor league system, you will have these high-speed Edutronic cameras, you know, trained on you in the bullpen. You'll have these Rapsodo devices tracking the spin and the spin axis and the movement of your pitches. You'll get a full workup of exactly what you do well and what you could do better. And you can really identify flaws in your current mechanics. And once you identify them, you can fix them. So it sort of started as this individual process that now is really being brought to scale on a league-wide basis.
Yeah, really interesting. And Brian Bannister is an interesting guy. He's a great photographer. He said that, and you quote him in your book as saying, everything I learned about pitching development, I learned from Ansel Adams.
That's right. Yes, I talked to Brian and wrote that part, so I guess I'll take this. Yeah, he was a professional pitcher himself. He made the majors. He was a son of Floyd Bannister, who was a very good pitcher himself. And Brian, during his own career, was one of the first players to take advantage of the new PitchFX technology that was installed, in 2008 or so in big league ballparks. And he was able to use that to analyze his numbers and develop a cutter and prolong his career. And he's really taken that philosophy from Ansel Adams, which is that, you know, it's not magic what produces a good photograph, for instance. It's, a unification of the light and the camera, the film stock you're using, and the exposure, and all of these things come together to create a great image. And Brian looks at developing players and pitchers in the same way. You know, you look at the elements that are there, and you figure out how to maximize the best ones and minimize the worst ones, and sort of design a pitcher from scratch and decide what you want that pitcher to look like, and then try to make some changes to get him closer to that point. So Brian is now an assistant pitching coach and also a vice president of pitcher development with the Red Sox. And he's in this sort of hybrid conduit role, as we call it in the book, where he's someone who speaks to the front office and can kind of interact with all the advanced data and analysis, but he's also a former player who's very comfortable on the field and in the dugout and in the clubhouse and in uniform. And so he can sort of speak to both of these camps and communicate the message from one to another. And that's been a really important figure in this movement, because it's nice to know these things in the front office. You know, if someone realizes by looking at the data that this guy could be better if he made this change or that change, but that doesn't do you any good unless you can convey that to the player and persuade the player that he needs to do those things. So often now it's former players like Bannister in that role who are really making that transformation happen.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Cooper, thanks a lot for that question. Appreciate it very much. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. One of the players, or one of the pitchers that you kind of feature throughout the book, he comes and goes in the book, is Trevor Bauer, who I think is a really interesting guy. He was, he was a high pick by the Diamondbacks, if I remember, but they traded him after a year and a half or so to Cleveland. Talk about him a bit.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with Trevor on this project, and one of the reasons we wanted to have him involved in this project is because he has been a pioneer in this field, and he's brought a lot of new ideas and technology. Not all have worked, but he's brought many things into the game that we see increasingly all across baseball, from the pro game to the amateur game. But also because he's a self-described terrible athlete, and he believes he built himself into a major league pitcher. And in Kyle Bodie's lab, he backs up Bauer on this claim. He says he's a terrible vertical leap. He has slow arm speed. He's maybe the worst athlete in professional baseball, they claim. And, you know, if you've seen him with his shirt off, as I have in the clubhouse, he does not look like he's not a physical specimen. He has a bad bod. There's a lot of evidence to back up that claim. Now, I don't think he can be a terrible athlete and be a major league player, but we do believe that, you know, there is something to his claim of building himself into this player and kind of creating a roadmap for other players to follow to get better. And like the Edutronic camera, for instance, is one of the big inanimate objects in our book, one of the technology pieces that have been brought into the game. And Trevor and his father, Warren, were looking for better ways to study his mechanics and looking for kind of an upgrade over the cameras they were using. And his dad stumbled upon this high-speed camera that was a little more affordable than the top-of-the-line cameras that were used in, you know, the space industry or aero, you know, for, you know, high-tech science. And said, okay, this is interesting. Let's train this. And they thought they were going to look at kind of macro body movements, how the arm moves, where's the wrist position, that sort of thing in slow-mo. But what Warren, Trevor's father, found is that when you train this on a pitcher's grip, you can really see for the first time how exactly each fingertip is leaving the ball, how the ball is exactly imparting spin. And when you think about a pitch, it's one of three things. It's a velocity, it is a spin rate, and it is a spin axis. And those three components basically determine what kind of pitch it is, how it'll move, you know, how it'll break, that sort of thing. So they saw, wow, this is amazing. We can see exactly how your curveball grip works, how your fastball grip works. And when you combine that camera, and just to be clear, up until that point, I mean, even if you look at your HD camera feed, if you try to see a pitcher's grip, it's still going to be blurry. You're not going to see exactly how each finger is working in concert to create a spin axis. So this camera was a step function forward in technology and what you could see. And when you pair that with today's pitch tracking device, like the Rapsodo unit, which you can put in any bullpen, it's a mobile pitch tracking unit, and it shows you exactly the spin rate, the spin axis, so it shows you how the ball is moving. So you can combine those two tools, the Edutronic and the Rapsodo. And in training, you can see, you know, if you slightly move your index finger this way in the ball or middle finger, it'll change the tilt of the ball, how it's spinning, its spin rate, and that'll guide you in how to design better pitches. We follow him through his 2018 season as he built this slider from scratch. He wanted a breaking ball that would move more horizontally, laterally than his curveball. And he started out in Cal Bodie's driveline facility in Seattle in the winter and designed this pitch that by May was one of the better sliders in baseball. And he used these tools. He trained it on other pitchers' grips he wanted to study, like Marcus Stroman of the Blue Jays and some of Bauer's own teammates like Kluber and Clevinger. And he built this pitch from scratch. And And what happens if more and more major league pitchers develop new breaking balls from scratch? That's a really exciting possibility. And, you know, Bauer's brought in, he kind of popularized long toss in baseball. He brought weighted balls in. So he's done a lot of things. He's been a controversial figure. His personality
is not well liked.
No, I mean, yeah, the Diamondbacks traded him as quickly as any top five pick has been traded in modern baseball history. So that says something about how he gets along with other people, mostly people who do not buy into his program and way of thinking. So he is not for every coach, that's for sure. And the Indians deserve a lot of credit for working with him and kind of letting him have his own plan. And he's taught the Indians some things about pitch design and weighted ball training. So it has been a beneficial relationship. But yeah, it is – he has a different personality, and he would say difficult personality. But I think in some ways, if you're going to go against tradition and convention, you can't care what people think about you. You have to kind of have this single-mindedness towards a goal. And I don't know, I'm not saying you have to be a jerk, but you might have to have a different personality to kind of implement some of these things and do it your own way. And he is such a complicated person, but he does deserve credit for making himself into a major league pitcher.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned a couple of things, weighted balls and throwing hard. And I think if you go back a long time, that was not thought of in a good way, weighted balls or throwing hard. And what is it about throwing long and throwing hard that makes a difference, a positive difference?
You want this one, Ben?
Sure. Ben, do you want to take that
one? Yeah, I think, you know, when you throw really far, and Trevor Bauer will practice and warm up before games by throwing from foul pole to foul pole, it's really impressive to see. You know, I think it enables you to build up some muscles that don't get stressed and tested otherwise. And, of course, that was a factor in why people were afraid of it. They figured it was an injury risk, but there hasn't really been any data to support that idea. And there's some data suggesting that it's actually beneficial in many ways, that it can, you know, increase your shoulder rotation and that can be a big factor in increasing your velocity, which is, you know, probably the single most important factor behind a pitcher's success. So some of these unorthodox practices that Bauer and others have adopted, I think there was a lot of resistance just because typically you had to be, you know, a high level player yourself to become a coach. That was where everyone in the coaching ranks came from, was former big leaguers or guys who had made it to the high minors maybe. And so I think there was a lot of stagnation because those guys would become coaches and they would teach the next generation of players the same way that they had been taught. And they figured, well, this was good enough for me and my peers, so why change things? But I think there often wasn't a lot of science behind those practices. And so this infusion of outsiders who in many cases do not have that traditional coaching background, who, you know, did not play high level ball themselves, who were college coaches and were recruited right from the college ranks, who were Twitter gurus who developed a name for themselves and came to the attention of teams. These people are now the ones who are increasingly in charge of players' instruction, and they're open to new ideas. So whether that is long toss, whether it's, you know, using a pole to warm up with like Trevor Bauer did, which he was often mocked for because of its appearance. But, you know, he felt that it was making him better and that there was science backing that up. Same thing with weighted balls, the idea of differential training or, you know, mixing up your tools, your implements, going away from just the standard ball you're used to throwing something a little different to kind of confuse your brain and get back to basics. And just to try to throw as hard as you can, the idea of a pull down drill, which is essentially just running and throwing as hard as you possibly can into a net. And the idea is that you just sort of reset yourself, you know, whatever bad mechanical habits you've picked up, whatever ways you're constraining yourself, that kind of all out, just natural throwing as hard as you can sort of tells you what your body wants to do, or the way that it naturally moves. And so a lot of these practices started at places like Driveline and the Texas Baseball Ranch, these hotbeds of new baseball ideas. But now it's not at all uncommon to see major leaguers and minor leaguers doing them throughout a team system, because they've been proven to work and they've filtered into the established organized ball.
You know, one of the interesting parts near the end of your book, you talk about these massive strides in player development has changed the compensation structure for baseball. And I found that very interesting, especially with free agents, for example. Not this last year, there were some free agents sitting around an awful long time before they were picked up.
Yeah. You look at the last 2 years and players' average salary, I think, has declined back-to-back years slightly. Free agency has been ice cold, and part of it is, we argue, is tied to this movement, where if teams believe they can develop their own players better, they're going to have better, cheaper players. They have less incentive to pay older veteran players who, as we've learned through Moneyball, that once you get over 30, generally you're declining as a player, and that's generally when you're more expensive too. So we argue that while this movement is helping players get better, and there are individual rewards, as we see with Justin Turner and Rich Hill going from either out of baseball or on the fringe of being out of baseball to enjoying lucrative multi-year contracts, it does benefit certain players, but it's also helping teams be even more efficient with payroll. And it's this player development is playing a big part of that. Why go sign ex-veteran slugger when you can develop Max Muncy? If you can get Christian Yelich to go from a 20 home run hitter to a 50 home run hitter, there's a ton of value there.
I tell you, I really enjoyed your book very much, and I want to thank you so much, Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk. Their book is called The MVP Machine, How Baseball's New Nonconformists Are Using Data to Build Better Players. Great. Thanks again, guys. I appreciate it very much having you with us today. And thank you for listening. And I hope you'll stay with us. There's lots more in store here. Scott Craven with us tomorrow on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.